This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone. And in studio with me today is a rather chatty and boisterous bunch. Over the last number of weeks, you've become accustomed to me bringing in Lori Lee Oates and Steve Tomlin. They've brought a friend today, Luke Ashworth, a political scientist at MUN. And guess what we're going to talk about?
We're Podco.
It's the three of us together. We're the team. Yeah.
You are Podco. Well, another week in the House of Assembly where the debate has been, I guess, sidetracked, if you will, and lots of controversy. Another call for resignation of Minister of the Crown. That's three since September, if anyone's counting. Could this controversy over the whole debate surrounding nepotism and political patronage, could this have been avoided?
Oh, from a process perspective, this could have very easily been avoided if they'd held a job competition. I mean, it would have taken one morning. They could have brought in three people, including Carla Foote. And, you know, that's kind of the hallmark of this government, right? They're always on defense, kind of explaining, rather than thinking ahead and getting on offense and avoiding these things. So then they tie up the taxpayers' time, talking about nonsense instead of the real issues. We've got a report on the table that says that a minister grossly mishandled his duties. So why is it even a question of whether or not he gets fired? You know, there's clear abuse of power. We've got a board of directors for Crown Corporation that didn't know who they were reporting to. We've got a person who was offered a job and then the offer was rescinded, which is a horrible way to treat people. And the CEO of the rooms has been fired, even though they're saying the rooms is doing great. So I think government has a lot to explain for right here.
And bad behavior is one thing, but trying to explain or justify bad behavior, which has been going on, try to distract attention from the fact that they actually did things that they shouldn't have been doing. I think they should have done what Ralph Klein would have done. He would have just fallen on the grenade. He would have come out and said, we did this. This is inappropriate. We've been investigated. We're guilty. Somebody has to pay for this, probably the minister. The premier, rather than basically defending himself or protecting himself from kind of what we're going through currently, he's wearing it. He's protecting the minister. And I don't know why. I mean, it's absolute chaos, but it's very good for reform. Because now we now have this kind of sense of constant policy failure, kind of this lack of good behavior. The executive is out of control. They can't be in charge in terms of the reforms going forward because they have too much power. And so I think that's a good thing. The door is opened a little bit.
Well, I think that's what we've seen in this scandal and the last scandal, which you also covered very well, Steve, is that it's all kind of at the time defenses. It's also the sort of standby to repel borders, but there's no clear government narrative coming out here. And, you know, that's worrying. But as you say, and I think all three of us have agreed on that, I mean, the fact that now democratic reform is on the table is maybe the positive thing that comes out of this.
And it's a larger context. I mean, part of the context is Muskrat Falls. Like, how did that occur? Why did that occur? What are all the things that occurred in terms of bad decision-making? Everybody's wearing it. Same time in the United States. We have, again, it doesn't appear to be whatever they gather, the evidence, and this kind of, you know, post-truth and attacking that. And again, there should be a clear narrative, but the narrative should be about, you know, saving democracy, improving democracy. That's not coming across. The government is up on the ropes. The opposition is having a great day.
Well, I think the narrative they're trying to spin is that they're the victims of the system. I mean, we saw Minister Hagee yesterday saying it's unreasonable to unduly victimize one individual for a mistake that is embedded in the system. I mean, it's absolutely insane to characterize a minister of the crown as a victim. There's some of the most privileged people in our society. They have a lot of power at their disposal, and it is incumbent upon them to use that power wisely and explain to the public through the media what they were doing while they were drawing a public paycheck. And we've seen the minister put out a statement statement that, you know, he's not going to be talking to the media. And, you know, he owes the people of this province an explanation through the media.
And let's be clear, they create the rules and then they break them.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, what was very strange about that reaction is, you know, you often see individuals thrown under the bus to save a system. Here we have a system being thrown under the bus to save an individual. This is very odd.
And it's kind of strange how the premier appears to be at times defending the status quo, that this is just a small little mistake, and this is actually good because now we're going to address it, and it's about process and the rest of it. No! There's a series of these bad mistakes, these decisions which really shouldn't have been made. And at the same time, we're supposed to have confidence in the premier working behind closed doors, talking about mitigation with the prime minister with a minority situation. And we're supposed to be just waiting for them to announce something without really having the opportunity to contest. So there's all kinds of challenges or problems in terms of the current system. And again, as Laurie is saying, it doesn't make really any sense. The power, the capacity that these people have in terms of operating within the system, they're accountable, but they're not being accountable. And I think that's a huge challenge going forward.
And if the opposition can't get Christopher Mitchell Moore fired for this, with this report on the table, what use are they to the people of Newfoundland and Labrador? And if they couldn't get Jerry Byrne fired, if they couldn't get a review of aquaculture in this province while drawing a public paycheck, they're accountable to us too. What good are they to us?
Laurie Leote, Steve Tomlin, and Luke Ashworth are my in-studio guests this afternoon. We'll be back right after this.
This is On Target St. John's on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain, On Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. Steve Tomlin, Laurie Leote, and Luke Ashworth are my in-studio guests this afternoon. Podco, collectively.
That's us.
We're the band.
we're talking band. About the week, this past week, in the House of Assembly. The Premier has come forward and said he's going to call a review, but it's framed as a lateral move. Was this a lateral move?
Well, you know, I think it's clear that there's been an abuse of the process. And, you know, it's really unfair to Carla Foote, the way she's gotten caught up in all this, because she did have quite a senior communications position in government with all, you know, every single communications person in government, probably 40 or 50 of them, were reporting to her. She's as qualified as anybody, you know, I know after 7 years of working in government communications. Many people who've gotten senior level communications positions before. I mean, it's really unfair the way her CV has kind of been eviscerated, and you know that she's gotten caught up in all this.
It's patronage. It's abuse of power. It's not working through the system. It's actually trying to figure out how to get around the system. And the opposition needs to make that clear. This is not how we should be hiring people. This is not what the process is designed. This is actually not by design. So you can't fix something which is not really about design. It's about manipulating or working around the system. And that needs to be the focus. And there needs to be heads rolling as a result of the fact they're not working the system in the way that the system was intended to work. There's gross mismanagement. There's bad behavior. This is patronage. This is politics, and this is not how the system should be, and is not designed to do that.
Is the opposition handling this in the right way?
Well, it's great to see Layla Evans emerge as kind of a hero in
here,
this.
Here.
You know, she's saying that, you know, politics should be an honorable profession, and it's good to see her shaming the bad behavior in the House and the partisan behavior. And, you know, Newfoundlanders and Labradorians are cheering for her right now because they want honor restored to our politics. I think people are responding to her authenticity, and she's really emerging as a potential leader for the PC at a time when they need a new leader.
Anybody watching this is just distraction. I mean, watching this, we're supposed to be able to watch decision making on our behalf and be proud of what they're doing, talking about the issues, the problems, the process in a realistic way. It's all basically just sidetracking. The premier talking about things that really are irrelevant or aren't really how things work or operate. And the opposition should be taking a clear kind of set of questions and really just going at them. And they should be talking about really some of the things within the report. They need to actually make the system accountable. The only good thing about this, I think, is that the NDP came up through the middle and said, okay, let's have reform. And they had them on the ropes. And they really, the power of the executive is really the challenge, the capacity, the autonomy of that kind of group, particularly the premier. And that needs to be contested. And that, I think the only good thing that's come out of this is we've had some voices who have talked to the general population and expressed what they're feeling and what they're seeing. And if anything positive comes out of this, is we're going to actually see the status quo weakened. It has been weakened, and there will be opportunities for people to contest the kind of the core problem. The core problem is that the executive has too much power, and they're able even to move around processes, and they shouldn't be able to do that.
I think that is a piece of good news in terms of it now put democratic reform on the table, and hopefully that'll go on. I think the bad news about this, though, is that we are facing a lot of serious problems in this province, beyond this province. We're not talking about issues like the province's contribution to climate change. We're not talking about the dire fiscal situation in the province. And I think the problem we're facing is it's not unique to Newfoundland and Labrador, is this crisis of government, where government has become spin, it's become theatre, it's become protecting itself rather than producing policy, producing ideas. So it's become very, very regressive.
It doesn't reflect what's going on. It doesn't reflect us.
No.
In terms of the people who are sitting around that table don't reflect the diversity, the challenges, the problems which are coming from the community.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's important that we engage them or figure out how to engage them, but do so in a way which is positive. Because I think one of the problems of this current situation, people are even more negative, I think. There's a lot of people out there who want to have the system changed. But this, if anything, has clearly demonstrated that the executive has too much power, too much control, and people can't allow that to continue. That's why, as Laurie's saying, we need an opposition who makes it very clear that there is a need to bring about change. You have to contest that power, but you also have to create narratives. You have to create opportunities. You have to create venues to mobilize the vast majority of the population who do want to move in a common direction. And I think there is this kind of sense that the community, if properly mobilized, if the venues were created, if the proper reforms were put into play, Newfoundland and Labrador would be in a much better position in terms of dealing with climate change or development or what have you.
This is a government that 3 years ago was the first in the province's history to introduce legislation aimed at improving politics when it comes to political appointments, that kind of thing, or removing politics, I should say. They formed the Independent Appointments Commission. Is that what's sticking in everyone's craw here?
Absolutely. And you saw it the very first night that the story broke, right? You could see people tweeting around clips from the Red Book where they were talking about ending partisanship and setting up the Appointments Commission. Of course, then they go and they put a former Liberal premier in charge of the Appointments Commission. So they've got a problem because they're claiming this kind of movement with boards has always gone on, or this movement to crown agencies. And that's true. Like when I worked in government, it was common to move communications people into the communications function at Hydro, for example. But when you run on ending partisanship and doing things differently, then you're going to be held to a higher standard.
And, as Luke was saying, this is not just a Newfoundland Labrador problem. Part of the challenge or problem is Peter Coyne has talked about, and Donald Savoy has talked about, that decision-making has become more political. So since you have within decision-making structures themselves, fewer people in public policy, more experts in terms of basically spinning the narrative, basically communication experts. And that's a distraction. It's a problem because theater brand marketing is much more now kind of focused upon, the skill sets are focused upon, as opposed to creating structures or processes in order to make sure that climate change or development and assessment and evaluation and engagement is occurring. So the primary focus in terms of new public management or kind of doing things differently and a lot of focus in terms of communication and getting it right in terms of the brand or sales is really not helping us define issues and problems, and I think that's problematic.
Yeah, I think it's exactly it. I mean, we've created a kind of a political class, both here but in other jurisdictions as well, where the expertise in playing the game is about the ability to spin, to present alternative realities, and so on. And that's all well and good when you're in a situation where you're not facing major crises. The system's resilient enough that it can take any damage from that. But we're not in that situation anymore now. We're a situation where we actually need people to actually make very, very hard decisions.
And I think a big challenge, too, is that in the post-war era, there's an interest in evidence and policy decision-making and science. We've kind of moved away from there because, of course, many of the decisions that are being made don't actually make any sense in terms of the evidence, in terms of climate change, or what have you. Mm. So rather than focusing upon that, we're demonizing science, we're weakening science. We're weakening the kind of the capacity of the ability for people to engage and actually to contest what's actually occurring. So part of the reason that there's so much focus on brand is because that's all you have, because you're basically doing things which aren't serving the public interest. But you, in order to get them to buy into it, you have to convince them that you're working on their behalf. So I think in terms of the current context, there's this kind of battle between the politics and kind of the demonization, which gives power to those who are basically sitting in the inner circle, as opposed to the general population, are completely disconnected and have lost faith. And even the weapons they used to have in terms of public policy and strong public institutions, whether it's NATO or whether it's international organizations, what have you, a lot of that has just kind of been blown away by those in positions of power.
At the top of the show, I asked, could this controversy have been avoided? We still don't know the reasons why some of these decisions were made and how they were made. Nobody seems to be answering these questions. And we wouldn't arguably be talking about this at all had it not been for the fact that the report was leaked to the media because it hadn't been tabled.
I think a lot of it's just arrogance. I think these kinds of things are occurring probably on a regular basis, in part because you can. this behavior is inappropriate. And that's why, we've been talking about the executive power is really part of the problem. So mm-hmm. whether it's Muskrat Falls or whether it's, the Aqua Gate or what have you, there's this kind of concern about the lack of information flow. There should have been information flow with Muskrat Falls, but there wasn't. There are too many silos. I mean, we don't share information the way we should be. We don't construct common questions across jurisdictions. We're not doing the kinds of things we should be doing if we're doing good public policy.
Now, one of the questions I saw come up on social media, right, was why was she being moved off the 10th floor? And again, I'm going to bring my knowledge of government communications to the table. Typically, that is a position you move people in and out of every couple of years. Ideally, what should be happening is after an election, you put someone in the position, and that's kind of your smooth over person after the election. And when you're starting to gear up to get ready for your next election, you bring a different person in, right? I mean, it is perfectly normal to have turnover in that particular position.
And again, what we're saying here is this has nothing to do with an individual's qualifications. It's just that the process was ignored.
That's it.
And patronage was the tool. Yeah.
There's kind of been a long history of moving people back and forth between Newfoundland and Labrador Hydro. It seemed like particularly when Ed Martin was there, they were doing the Muskrat Falls deal. There was almost an open door there. I don't think the people at the rooms are quite accustomed to this, right? I don't think they're CEO and they're bored. So culturally, I think that was a bit of a shock for them.
And I don't think we've taken full advantage advantage of what we could be doing in terms of public policy. In the healthcare system, we're spending more than anybody else, but we don't have enough family doctors. The medical association is questioning the decision making and saying that there really is not over any overall plan. There isn't a needs-based kind of forecast in terms of or identifying the gaps that need to be identified. So as a consequence, it becomes a political fight between the medical association, who have their own agenda, and they're very active and they're very popular and the rest of it, as opposed to having a really kind of a plan, a health human resource plan based on need, based on evaluation, and creating that structure in order to ensure that the general population's needs and priorities are being met and that health outcomes are actually being achieved. But we have currently, in many areas of public policy in Newfoundland and Labrador, is a lack of public policy, a lack of focus in terms of what we should be looking at, how should we be evaluating, how do we put into play the policy cycle. And so there, as a consequence of that, there are probably more opportunities to say, well, we just can work the system, because the system is not really all that anchored.
You mentioned making policy based on need, but it surprises me sometimes. I have a series of guests that come through here on a regular basis, and I'll often say, well, what are the statistics surrounding your particular issue or cause? And the answer I get more often than not is, these stats aren't available. We don't know the numbers. So how can you base policy on a lack of information?
When I've been in places like Brazil where we produce data and people who are within government don't want us to produce the data, because once you identify the data, you actually identify the problems. And of course, you actually take away their capacity, the ability to do the kinds of things they may want to do and think that will get them into position of power or mobilize their voters or their base. Because once you have that data, once you have the data in terms of climate change or health outcomes or costs or development or differences between rural versus urban or gender or what have you, you have basically identified the critical issues that need to be addressed. And that's what we should be doing. But politically, that is a problem, because when we're places like Brazil, they're saying, well, disparity is a problem, but now we'll really have a political problem, because now we actually know the degree or the extent to which there is actually a problem. Or climate change, if, you know, people say, well, okay, well, this is fake. But if you actually create credible information and data, and people are looking at it saying, oh my God, what are the impacts? And the impacts are quite clear. So you want, you know, knowledge construction, data construction, or lack thereof, is to a great extent very political. Because you may not want that data to exist, because you're going to mobilize and anger people, and they're going to pressure for action.
Steve Tomlin, Lori Lee Oates, and Luke Ashworth are my in-studio guests this afternoon. We'll be back right after this.
This is On Target St. John's on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain, On Target St. John's on VOCM.
And our in-studio guests this afternoon, Steve Tomlin, Lori Lee Oates, and Luke Ashworth. And we're talking politics, of course. And Lori Lee, I understand there's a question you want to dig your teeth into, and that is, did Christopher Mitchell Moore act alone in this particular scenario?
Well, I find it hard to believe that the Premier's office wouldn't know anything about this, because the way that that position is set up is that it's kind of a dual reporting relationship. Like, they report to the Clerk of Executive Council, but because it's like kind of an ADM level position, it serves at the pleasure of the Premier's office. So there's kind of that dual reporting relationship to the Chief of Staff in the Premier's office. So it's really hard to believe that the Chief of Staff knew nothing about this. Even if the Premier wasn't dealing with it. And really, if I was in opposition right now, I'd be A-tipping every email in the Premier's office to get the paper trail on this.
Yeah. Should Mitchell Moore fall on his sword?
The Premier should have gotten rid of him. Like, it's disgusting to watch the Premier falling on his sword for a minister. It makes him look so weak. It's the weirdest political strategy I have ever seen in my life. Like, premiers don't take a hit for ministers.
No.
Ministers take a hit for premiers.
And I keep thinking of Ralph Klein. I mean, Ralph Klein could get drunk and beat up poor people at Christmas time come out and say, I'm sorry. You know, I was drunk and this is inappropriate. And of course, people would at least accept that, as opposed to if we went on for 3 weeks saying, I didn't do it, even though I was on camera, even though all the evidence is very clear. That's even worse, because it gives legs. I mean, you know, we had that with, you know, Jerry Byrne talking about, you know, racism and, you know, you're supporting the breaking of the law and doing everything to avoid their actual issue. I mean, it's easier. The public, I think, is more confident if people, based on the evidence, say, yeah, we're human. We made a mistake. And I think he should have been removed immediately, and the story would have been over. It's not very often you have a premier standing up wearing this. He's actually defending a minister, but he's going down in flames. And it's all about, you know, this is a premier-dominated system of decision-making, and he's taking himself out.
We also have a liberal minority government that I saw a few people on Twitter remarking is acting like a majority, Luke.
Yeah, that's precisely it. You have to work very differently in a minority. And I think that's what the one thing that came out of the election. The election was a deep disappointment in terms of the way that it was called, the way it was handled. And, you know, I mean, I think it did call into question some of our the democracy in this province. But the result was something that at least you could say, okay, that we're now in a situation where the parties have to work together. But absolutely, we've basically got a majority government with a minority.
And it was pretty obvious when they came back and appointed pretty much exactly the same cabinet
absolutely.
That they really didn't get the message that the people want change and you do not have as much power as you used to have.
And minorities can work really well. I mean, there are lots of jurisdictions that have minority governments or even coalition governments that work exceedingly well. So there's an opportunity there, but there's an opportunity lost. And now we're looking, probably staring down the barrel of a possibly a very unstable House, perhaps leading to an early election.
I don't know how they can keep going.
And the scary thing about this, too, is that we have a system of federalism where you have these bilateral negotiations. And so you have a premier who is representing a minority situation who is, you know, basically in a desperate state who wants to get anything or something in order to play for his base so he can stay back in power. But there's something significantly wrong with a system where you have, you know, a government on its last legs who is really not speaking for the vast majority of the population, who may be desperate, but has the capacity to work behind closed doors and suddenly announce something. And come back to what Laurie was saying, the opposition should understand and recognize they are also in a minority situation. So there are clear advantages. I mean, they should be out in the public.
Yes.
And the way that Podco is out in the public, talking to people and saying, what would you like to see in terms of democratic reform? They should be filling some of that void. And, you know, for the most part, the NDP, I think, did a really great job in terms of mobilizing the Lisa's idea in terms of democratic reform. But they could do a lot more. There's an opportunity. The door is open.
How does government strategize now in putting together this budget and ensuring that it's going to survive after the budget?
I really don't know how this government is going to get past spring, because it's just like crisis after crisis. You know, they're really not reading the mood on the ground, particularly if they're out presenting themselves as victims. And, you know, they think that the right thing to do is for the minister to try and survive this. Like, they really don't have a sense kind of how angry people are at how much power they have and how they continuously abuse that power. And, you know, it needs to be said, too, like, this is Minister Mitchell Moore's second brush with a lack of process, because he had major issues previously on the cannabis file and failing to tender things properly. You know, so people are like, when is enough enough?
And the biggest challenge or problem for them, I think, and even for the opposition, is that the premier's wearing it. So the brand, the campaign is already there. You just have to go out. You don't have to campaign on anything. And I think that's what the opposition is probably thinking, because they're not saying enough. They should be saying more in terms of actually providing a positive narrative to mobilize these people and to to shape or transform how we do politics and decision making. But I think for them, there is a clear incentive, because I think, as we'll probably see, the premier is becoming less and less popular. There's, again, a challenge in terms of the legitimacy of the government itself. And so if they wanted to go early and have an election, this might be an opportunity, because they have played this so badly.
Yeah, but the problem also there is that the just like with the last election, the chances are this a coming election won't solve anything, because the problem isn't with the rotation of parties. This is not a partisan issue. This is largely a failure of the political class.
Yes. And that needs to be addressed. That needs to be talked about, because having a campaign where basically we just throw these rascals out and put in others without a real clear narrative in terms of what they hope to do in order to change or transform it, the status quo survives.
So that's the first thing we need to do in democratic reform. We need to reform the political class, its recruitment, its nature.
And how do we do that? That's the question, because we've seen a lot of people, good, capable people who are putting themselves forth, politically speaking, who are possibly not the right people for the job.
So we've got this new democratic reform process right now, and hats off to Alison Coffin for bringing forward that motion. I think she's reading the mood on the ground better than just about anybody else in there. And she asked for a secretary to be set up. Apparently, there's lots of information in the Department of Justice already that can be transferred to this secretariat. So what needs to happen is they need to start talking to people like us who know about electoral systems and democratic institutions. And they need to start researching best practices globally. I keep saying we need to look at the New Zealand system, which is working extremely effectively right now. It's very similar to us in the sense that it's post-colonial. They've got a large white population. They've also got indigenous populations, a lot of rural territory. But we need to be looking at best practices and what's working elsewhere.
And I also think they need to be thinking in terms of the partnerships, in terms of the larger context. So I've been working on a report with the City of St. John's in terms of democratic reform with Amanda Bittner and Marie Ryan, and as well as Ross Reed. So there is a real, there's pressure in order to transform or change the system. But of course, the City of St. John's doesn't have the capacity, it doesn't have the legislative power to actually make these changes. So we need to understand and recognize that there's a lot of people within civil society and a lot of local communities who really are concerned about climate change or the concern about doing things differently. And so rather than just having this focused upon, the parties and the partisanship, I think there needs to be an understanding that we need to reach out. We need to create something much bigger. That democratic reform is not just about signage, or it's not about, finances for
colors.
Elections. It needs to be much more significant. So I think there's an opportunity, but it needs to be the opposition, it needs to be the general community that are mobilized in a fundamental way. And again, there's an opportunity here because there is a sense of crises in theater and we need to do things differently. But a lot of that will depend on whether we can actually work across systems, whether we actually open this up in a fundamental way. And PODCO, we can only do a little bit, but the media, I think, is reporting this. There's this kind of sense that things are not as they used to be, and the reporting, I think, is different, much more critical than it was probably in the past, in part because there is an understanding that the community is frustrated or angry, or they're leaving. We can't afford to lose more people because people are leaving because they're so frustrated with how the system is currently working or not working.
It's also generational change. There's a lot of young people in the province are very unhappy with the way things are going, and they're not being listened to. I mean, we had was it the largest, at least one of the largest demonstrations on the 29th of September?
Largest I've seen in my lifetime, and I've been protesting at Confederation Building a long time.
And the response from powers that be is pretty muted.
Yeah, clean oil is what they're talking about.
Yeah, which is a nonsense.
Instead of a green economy.
But as Laurie was saying, maybe we need another process. Maybe we need to talk about a constitutional convention. Maybe we need to actually create and have workshops in order to bring these people together who really do have. I mean, one of the things we've certainly demonstrated or shown with PODCO, and the media does as well, there's so much diversity and there's so much knowledge at the community level that people could actually solve many of these things, but they have to have the capacity the ability to do it, or the narrative that they actually, that it matters, that what they're not being manipulated or controlled by those who have other agendas.
This province has a lot of very capable people. I mean, it's one of our greatest assets, and we're not using it. not using it at all.
We produce the best musicians, the best writers, the best actors, the best TV shows. I mean, we're sitting on a gold mine of talent here. I missed it so much when I lived outside the province. We've got no idea what we've got going for us. And if we could just get the leadership right, we could totally make it work for us.
Yeah. Lori Leote, Steve Tomlin, Luke Ashworth, my in-studio guest this afternoon. We'll be back right after this.
Claudette Barnes is ready to take you home in the style you've become accustomed to. Local news, classic hits, and surprise guests. The VOCM Drive Home, this afternoon at 2 on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Steve Tomlin, Lori Leote, and Luke Ashworth are my in-studio guests this afternoon. Not much to talk about this week. We're, twiddling our thumbs here. We were talking earlier about the possibility of an election being called, but we also have two leadership contests that could be sparked by leadership reviews before that happens. What can we expect out of that process?
We've seen Layla emerging in the PC camp as a potential PC leader, and I'm sure there's lots of people out there who want to see a female premier right now. Who knows what could possibly happen in the Liberal camp? It really is kind of a party that's dominated by elites, and I don't think that's the kind of premier that people want right now, right? It's dominated by kind of a lot of elite West Coast families, and people are tired of, you know, just changing out one elite for another, which is one of the problems Chess Crosby had in the last election, actually.
And there's a lot of volatility. I guess the NDP are probably in a better position than anyone.
and they're polling really well, even on the West Coast and in Labrador, right? Allison is one of the most popular leaders right now, not surprisingly.
And focusing less on brand, they're thinking more on policy, which actually helps and connects with the public.
Who is the heir apparent or heirs apparent for the Liberal Party?
The two Andrews get mentioned, right? And that's Andrew Parsons and Andrew Fury. And I think, again, both of them are going to have problems that people aren't going to want to elect someone who's from a traditional party family.
I knew you'd have to change the whole brand.
Dean McDonald is another name that gets thrown around in the Liberal camp. And, you know, that raises issues about bringing in a business person premier again.
Yeah, maybe this is the thing. I mean, we talk about democratic reform in the province, but in some respects, that's something we also need in the parties as well.
And parties very much act as gatekeepers, right, in terms of determining who gets into the system, which is problematic.
Well, we talked a little bit about that during the break. It seems to me that the ideology between each of the three parties is fuzzy. You know, it's really hard to tell who's who and what their policies are based on their party platforms, because they're really not that vastly different. Crosby himself has come forward and said, well, really, we're more progressive than the Liberals. You know, we're more aligned with the NDP. And to many people, that was just like, what kind of moment? So, you know, where are we with that? Why don't we have these clear, this is what a party stands for?
Well, we have brokerage parties, but we also have a confederate party system, which means that parties at the national level or different provinces aren't exactly the same as the beats that we have here. So we know that even with Danny Williams, when he's saying anybody but conservative. So Canada, we don't have an integrated system in the way that the Americans have an integrated system, and that adds even further to the confusion.
I think where we are ideologically as a province kind of depends on how much money we have, because when Williams was in, he had, you know, lots of money at his disposal, so he was, you know, spending left to the NDP. So it's really not, I mean, I think every government would spend if they had the money to spend, right?
It tends to be practical, but again, there's consistent sources of power, whether it's oil or gas or natural resources and so forth. So there is a limit in terms of how creative you can be given what you inherit.
Yeah. But we do have, I think that was a major problem with the last election too, is as you were saying, there's no clear... There's no clear water between certainly the two major parties. So in that sense, the electorate doesn't actually have very much choice.
And there should be some, commitment to actually producing a policy cycle in terms of, you know, all we have is coffee shop talks or buses, as Paul Lane was talking about. We need a lot more than that. And it wouldn't be very difficult for parties to produce a policy cycle. This is the problem. This is how we're going to resolve it. This is how we're going to implement it. This is how we're going to evaluate it. It wouldn't be that difficult to do. But they don't, in part, because they don't want to, because they know probably a lot of things they're talking about probably aren't doable.
They even limit the number of debates they're going to be involved in, because we were trying to arrange a debate and they said, no, we've already arranged a debate. That's what we're doing. It's even hard for the public to hear what people are saying unless it's during one carefully controlled debate.
They do everything they can to get out of debates because there is risk inherent in debates, right? The chance that your leader might make a mistake that's going to cost them.
Well, so what? That's what we need to know.
Yeah. But the other side of this is that yesterday they were talking about the democracy cookbook and the diverse perspectives and ways of thinking about issues and problems. So you actually have people, hearing about it within the legislature. So there isn't a lack of capacity or the ability to talk about these issues within the civil society. And there could be mobilized. And it's sad that it isn't. So there's a real challenge or problem in terms of the current system of decision making, because that exists. There is a tremendous capacity to find and resolve problems within the community, but it's just not being tapped.
We see that with the third sector, the voluntary sector here, the activists right across the political spectrum in the province. There's a hell of a lot of politics being talked here and different policies and so forth, but it isn't really kind of getting translated to the top table.
And a lot of it has to do with resources or lack thereof. I always come back to Jerry Byrne talking about gardening, and he put 100K into gardening and a maximum of like 500 for community. What can you do with that? I mean, that's silly. I mean, people should be able to feed themselves. You think of the money that's going in other programs, food production, where people themselves can feed themselves by growing their own, and bringing the community together. It's insulting to have a budget of 100K for the whole province. I mean, so civic engagement, democratic reform, we could do all of these things, but you'd have to put
in
the,
an
put
area
the resources
that into essentially
it.
Falls under municipal governance anyway.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
But it's insulting that you'd actually run on the band that we're putting in 100K for gardening so people can feed themselves. I mean, that's nothing. That's nothing.
So where do we end with all of this? This week that was, first question is, are we going to see the House extended to next week?
It depends on how much legislation they've got left. They're not going to stay there any longer than they absolutely have to.
I hope they stay longer because we're getting an opportunity to contest power, and I think that's good for the general population. And we also need some positive narratives, as Luke was saying. We need to understand, recognize there actually are opportunities now because the door is opening. That we're exposing why some of this bad behavior is occurring, and it all has to do with abuse of power. It all has to do with too much autonomy, too much capacity at the executive level. And so, if we want to transform or change it, first we need to understand where the problem is, and that's the problem.
Public discourse, of course, is important too, and that's what keeps feet to the fire and all those kinds of things, and keeps people thinking very critically about what's happening around them. So I want to thank all of you for coming in this afternoon. Final thoughts, Lori Lee?
I hope they take democratic reform seriously. And I think it needs to be said, we've only been talking about this for a few months now. We've only done 6 episodes, and we've already got, a new equal committee struck. And I think we are going to do everything that we have to pay attention to that committee and make sure that real democratic reform happens.
Luke?
Yeah, we need real democratic reform. We're always worried that it's just going to be end up being a smokescreen or a fudge, but we need real democratic reform, and that means getting ordinary people involved. We need discussion on the street corners. And we need real democratic reform.
Steve? I think we've seen a real shift in terms of the discourse. I mean, you listen to Patty this morning, you listen to a lot of people within the media, they understand and recognize that there is a desire, there is an appetite for people to contest power. So we're seeing the media, I think, being a lot more aggressive than they have in the past in terms of making sure that some of these ideas and these problems are coming across. And I think that's a very good thing. I think that's very healthy for democracy that we're seeing the media and a lot of others who are very concerned about the community, but also have faith in the community, that to provide that kind of opportunity to do something about it. And so I think the media has been, within the last little while, has been a lot more aggressive, a lot more concerned about democracy than they were in the past. And I think that's healthy, and that's healthy for everyone.
Because there's a certain maturation, I think, that's happening now. And social media is in part to blame and to be credited for that, because some of the discourse, of course, on social media is so base that the frustration is being created, and there's much more critical thought being shared as well. It's just the ability to filter out one from the other.
And the media can also play a significant role, because there's a lot of crap that goes on social media. So by having people like Podco come in and having kind of an informed discussion, that's what people are looking for. I think the media is doing a lot more than they did in the past, in part because the pressure is coming from social media, but also recognizing that they're relevant, they're significant within the democratic process and system.
Well, folks, this has been fun as usual. I really appreciate you taking the time with us. I would strongly suspect we'll be talking again early in the new year.
Yes.
If I don't see you again before then, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all three of you. And in the meantime, we'll be back tomorrow at 1. I hope you join us then.
Local News Now, a VOCM News Update.
This news update is presented by the VOCM Cares Foundation, supporting charities in Newfoundland and Labrador.